This is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to another special episode of the Sky Blues Extra podcast, which is kindly sponsored by Shortland Horne, Coventry's leading estate agents. My name is Tom Ward and I'm joined this evening by David.
Evening.
Evening, mate. And I'm delighted to say we're also joined by a very special guest. Our guest this evening started his career in the Chelsea Academy before making the switch to Brentford, where he worked up the ranks before making his debut in 2017. He signed for the Sky Blues in the summer of 2018 and went on to make 32 appearances across a two-year spell, scoring four goals in the process. I'm, of course, talking about Zane Westbrook. Evening, Zane. Welcome to the Sky Blues Extra podcast.
Evening, guys. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. It's really good to have you on. Obviously, we got to know you quite well as a Coventry player over the last couple of years, but we don't know a huge amount of you about you sort of before your time at Coventry. Yeah. So I thought it'd be good just to go right back to the start. Believe you were born in Surrey, is that right, Zane?
Yeah, I was born in Chertsey in Surrey, yeah, and grew up around Woking area.
Yeah, I thought it'd be good just to hear a bit more about sort of your upbringing and I guess what got you interested in football.
I think that would be my dad, really. I was put around a football probably as soon as I could walk and kick, and he was a big Tottenham fan and big football fan in general, so I got into it really early, started playing for my first Sunday league team when I was about 5 years old.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, so it was a quick start for me, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much as long as you can remember, I guess.
Yeah. Been playing and going to watch. I mean, not so much in the last few years, I haven't been to as many, but growing up I was going to watch any team I could, really.
Mm. I was going to say, you said your dad was a Tottenham fan. Did you support Tottenham as a kid or did you support a different team?
Yeah, so I was a Tottenham fan. Most of my family is as well. But weirdly, I spent my childhood going to Fulham, actually. We had season ticket at Craven Cottage for about 7 years.
Nice. And did you have any sort of like heroes growing up? Were there any players you were kind of trying to model yourself on?
I think there were a lot of players. I mean, from Spurs when I was young, I liked Luka Modric, Tom Huddleston. When I used to go and watch Chelsea, I really liked Joe Cole. Mm. And then for the Craven Cottage days, when Moussa Dembélé was at Fulham, I idolised him when he was there.
Yeah, great players, especially Modric.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
He's still going as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zane, obviously we saw you at Coventry as a midfielder. Is that the position you've sort of always played as a kid and you were always a midfielder?
When I was about probably 6 to 10, I was actually a bit more of like a winger, a left winger, sort of like the Joe Cole. I think that's who I sort of could see myself being most when I was young. Bit of a winger / 10. And I think due to probably speed and pace reasons, I was put more into midfield, into attacking midfield, and that's where I found myself playing, yeah.
And you made a move sort of in Brentford and you sort of worked up the ranks in their academy. How did that come about, that move, and what was your time there like?
Well, I was at Chelsea from 6 till 14, got released from Chelsea then, and I don't actually remember how it came about for me getting to Brentford, but I went there and it was probably the best thing I could have done. I really enjoyed it. I think I was there for about 7 years and it was a real great place to be, great people and a real learning culture. So for a young player, it was really good. And even when they went to the B team, a lot of people were thinking it was a weird move. And for me, it was actually a really good thing. We had great coaches coming in. We were really close to the first team and obviously didn't work out for me at the end and I had to make the move to Coventry. But I mean, I loved it there, yeah.
Yeah, and you made your debut against Fulham in a West London derby. That must have been a special moment for you making your debut and also in a really big fixture.
Yeah, it was. And it was funny, like I said to you about me going to Craven Cottage when I was growing up. It was funny, my dad and his mates were all in their season ticket seats in the in the home end. And so everyone's going to clap the away fans after the game. And I'm looking for my dad in the home end. Everyone's thinking, this is a derby. Why is he going over there? But no, that was a great day and one that no one can take away from me.
And we talked to a lot of players on the podcast about loan spells. And you went to Solihull Moors and Leyton Orient. How did they help your development and education as a player?
Well, I think the loans are really good and I would always advise them to any young player coming through because it is just a complete different life than youth football and 23s, even if it's B team football.
Yeah.
Because my first experience, I went to Solihull Moors and I wasn't there for that long. You just get this feeling of how much it matters, winning and getting results. And I think everyone will have the, sort of the same opinion on when you change from 21s or reserve team football to a first team environment. And maybe the quality isn't as good, but the meaning of the game becomes so much more. And yeah, I really enjoyed it at Solihull Moors. Obviously, I got sent off in my second game there. And by the time my ban was over, Brentford decided it would be better for me to go to Leyton Orient instead of going back to Solihull Moors.
Right.
So I went there instead, which I did enjoy. But I sort of was in the team for the start and wasn't in the team at the end. And I felt like it was better to just head back to Brentford rather than stay at Leyton Orient and not play when I was doing that at Brentford.
Yeah, sure.
And you joined the Sky Blues in 2018 on a 2-year deal. When did you first hear about the interest from Coventry?
So I'd had a funny season at Brentford, really. When that season I'd started, I was on the bench a few times and I thought I was sort of in and amongst it. And I could feel myself getting further and further away, and no one was really talking to me. So I made the decision sort of just after, I think, February time, that I wanted to go and look elsewhere and go on trial or just see what else was out there before my contract was up, because I didn't want them to sort of run my contract out and not be prepared for anything. And one of my old coaches at Chelsea, Ben Knight, who was also my first Sunday league coach, rung AD Vivash and just said, listen, Zane's looking for a club. If you're interested. And he instantly phoned me. I remember I was going into Pure Gym at the time. I got a call from AD I hadn't spoke to since he was my coach when I was about 12 years old. And he just said, listen, the gaffer Mark Robbins wants to see you. I've told him that you're looking for a club and you can come and trial. You can come here for a week. And instantly just said, yeah, I'll drive up the next day and come. And I was supposed to be there for a week. And I think after three, I trained once or twice and then played in a reserve game against Crewe at the Rico.
Yeah.
And I went back in the change room and the gaffer, Mark Robbins, came up to me and just said, listen, I'm signing you. I want you. And
brilliant.
It was a great feeling. He really showed faith in me, that he liked me and he wanted me at the club. And because at that time, I didn't know whether I was going to have to go to a few clubs and go on trial and
see.
I didn't really know what was going to happen at that time if I had to go back to Brentford. But he told me that he wanted me there. He wanted to sign me, get like a pre-contract sort of done. And it was the season where Cov got promoted from League Two. So
yeah.
I got to train with the team at the back end of that season to get to know everyone, get settled in. And that was, it was a great sort of turnaround, because I wasn't sort of lingering at Brentford for too long. No, and I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
As soon as sort of I'd met Mark Robbins, he wanted me to sign. So that was a great feeling.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It's interesting to hear about AD as well, because we hear a lot of players, praising him a lot about his training methods and things like that. But I guess as he was just so involved with Chelsea for a number of years, he's obviously got that network of young players as well. And, he's obviously helping with the scouting side of things as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think they've got sort of a good relationship where they're both in contact with different groups of people and their coaching comes from probably two different styles. And so that when it comes together, the last few years, it has worked really well. And I would say that AD does most of the coaching and things like that. But again, when he put my name forward to the gaffer, it's not his final decision whether a player signs or not. So I think there'll be a lot of players that he will have put forward to the gaffer. But at the end of the day, it's his decision whether he wants him in his team or not.
Yeah, definitely. And what was it about Coventry that sort of attracted you to the club? Did you know much about the history and things like that?
Well, first of all, I knew that Coventry was a massive club, and I knew from being at Brentford and not being in the team in the Championship that I was going to have to take a step down to take a step back up, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And when I was at Coventry, and I'd sort of done a bit of research and watched a few games, because I knew how important it was for me to sign for the right club because of the type of football I play. I knew that I couldn't just sort of sign for any team and hope that I would shine, because the style I play probably isn't the style of most League One, League Two clubs.
Of course.
But I got to see, and even in the first week I was there, the first few days, the gaffer was talking to me about the style of play and how I would fit into that. So I instantly knew that he wanted me because of what I brought, and I wanted the club because of what they brought, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And what did Mark Robbins say to you before you signed? And I guess in your sort of early few training sessions, had he talked much about his plans for the season and like where he wanted you to play and that kind of stuff?
He didn't talk to me so much about where I was going to play or how I was going to be in the team. He knew that my style was right for the club and what the type of player he wanted. But I'd say the main thing he said to me was, if you sign here, even though we're in League Two, he said, you're signing for a bigger club than this league and a bigger club than League One. He said he was definite about we were going to League One.
Yeah.
And it was funny because he said that, and I didn't think he would have remembered. But when we got promoted at Wembley, I was obviously in my suit watching the game, and I went on the pitch to celebrate with him after. And when I went to sort of give him a bit of like a hug and say congratulations and stuff, he looked at me in my eyes and said, I told you so. I told you we'd get to League One. And I thought it was quite nice that he remembered that.
Yeah, that's brilliant. In terms of your sort of first pre-season at Coventry, what was that like?
It was full on. There was quite a few injuries in that pre-season. I think Kells was out. Tom Bailey was away. He was away with England. And I was playing almost 90 minutes. So I obviously hadn't played a match in a long time, because when I left Brentford, I was only allowed to train. I could play two 23s games and that was it. So I hadn't played a game in a long time, and then I was playing a lot of 90 minutes, and I thought, oof, I've got a chance here of starting the first game. And then, like, sods or I tore my quad in the... We played Derby at Nuneaton. I didn't know I'd done it at the time, but I tore my quad. I thought it was just tight, and I was on set pieces back then, and the gaffer loved his set piece sessions. He would make you take 100 corners, 100 free kicks. He would just drill you into it. And I remember it was this day before the West Brom game, the last pre-season game. I was taking him, and he was like, one more. And it went on for about half an hour. one more. And I just said to him, I can't kick the ball anymore. It's killing me. And that ended up sort of, I wouldn't say ruining my whole season, but I sort of felt like I was going to start the first few games, because Abs Agogo started the season with Doyler, and I was not in a disrespectful way or anything like that, but I felt like the gaffer wanted one breakup play and one ball play, and I felt like I was going to start there. But yeah, I was out for the first 8 weeks, and I came back from that, and I tore a ligament in my ankle, and I was out again, and I didn't really get near it until Christmas time.
And when you first came into the club, what did you make of the lads? Was it easy to sort of get him involved in the changing room? And was there anyone in particular that you were close to?
Yeah, it was. It was really easy to settle in a really friendly group. I think the season I joined when in the League Two season, I was probably quite close to players like Josh Barrett, who was on loan.
Yeah, he seemed like a bit of a character.
Yeah, he was a bit of a character, and he was. Because I don't know if I had played against him when he was at Reading, but I felt like we just instantly, I think Reading, Brentford, we had a lot to sort of talk about. Also with Dom Hyam, I was quite close with him. And then the next year, there was a big change of players in that next season, and it started off really slow. I remember the group was quite sort of segregated, but then I think sort of Tom Davies, Jack Grimmer, when Dave Myler was there.
Yeah.
Brandon Mason was new. We had a really, real good mix of people. Everyone sort of really outgoing, which was nice.
Yeah. And that season that you mentioned about the 8 appearances, did you find it quite tough not being in the side and sort of watching? And I suppose it's a case of, you know, biding your time.
Yeah, it was tough because obviously I knew I had sort of gone down a league from Brentford from my decision, and I wanted to, everyone wants that instant sort of impact. I wanted to play, I wanted to sort of burst onto the scene at Coventry, but it just wasn't to be, and I had to bide my time and do it. And looking back on it now, everything worked out really well, but at the time obviously I was stressed. I was thinking, oh, I've moved away, I've come here, I've taken a chance, should I have stayed, should I not have? But I mean, everyone, all the coaching staff, especially AD, was really good with me then to just keep me at it, keep me training, and sort of knowing that your time's going to come. And obviously the good thing was I was watching young players in the team. There wasn't too many experienced players who I thought, I'm never going to be able to sort of get in here. The chances are not there. There was a lot of young players in the team, and the gaffer was giving them a chance, and I felt it will come. I just need to sort of stay in there.
Yeah, and a game that lives long in the memories of Coventry fans is Sunderland away when we won 5-4.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about that game? You came on as a sub in that match.
Yeah, that was some day. I remember all the cameras there and everything, and obviously it's a hyped up game all week with all the fans sort of going at it and whatever. And everyone knew that the cameras were there. So I think it was, we obviously weren't expecting for a 5-4, but we're thinking we'd just love to get one over here and get it on Netflix and all that. And it probably couldn't have ended better. I mean, I can't say I did too much in the game. I remember I came on and got elbowed in the mouth by McGeady. I was bleeding for 8 minutes. Didn't want the ref to see, so there were no more added minutes. But no, that was a great day, yeah.
And have you since watched that on Netflix? That
film? Yeah, I've seen it. And I've also seen the blood all over me on the thing. But no,
they made it very dramatic, didn't they? Chaplin's goal in slow motion.
Yeah, which was even better for us.
Yeah.
And moving on to the title winning season, what was the feeling in the camp ahead of the season? Did you expect the team to do so well?
See, I've had this conversation with a few people. It was quite weird. I mean, we had a good season the season before, especially the second half of it. And when we came back in for pre-season last season, it was like everyone came in saying, we're going to get promoted.
Yeah.
And it was just, it wasn't, I know, obviously the staff wanted promotion and they were saying, that's our aim, this is our aim. But more so just the lads in the changing room walking around saying, this has got to be done, this has got to be done, because we are getting promoted. And we didn't have a clue what any other team in the league was like.
Yeah.
We were just walking around sort of convincing ourselves that we were the best team and we were going to get promoted. And I think that really came in when we played Southend on day one.
Yeah.
Even though it was only 1-0, we felt like we were, like, not to be disrespectful, but a step ahead of them.
Yeah,
we dominated the game. After that game, we just sort of got on a roll and we felt like this is... From the start, the pressure was it was ours to lose. We always felt like that, and I think probably created our own pressure at times. But we just sort of had that. Everyone was walking around, and I remember Fads came in, and I hadn't really spoke to him yet, and he's just talking about promotion, and it was like everyone knew, new player, old player, young or old, everyone was just talking about promotion, and it worked for us in the end. Yeah.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
And we made some really good signings, didn't we, in the summer? You know, players like Dabo, Godden, O'Hare. Could you sort of tell that there was a really strong team sort of formulating?
You could tell that there was a dedicated team. There was a lot of ambition in the team. I think the year before, obviously, it was the first season in League One. So as much as you want to finish as high as you want, you want to just win game by game and survive the league. You want to stay in the league. I think the pre-season that we did, the promotion season, it was everyone was working hard. Everyone wanted to get themselves and the team into the championship. It was a really, like, sort of, I don't know how to say, it was a hungry dressing room that we had. And it still is there. I know that the mood there isn't to just make up a number in the championship. It's to really take on the league. And it's just sort of the mentality that was created, I think, from that pre-season.
Yeah, definitely. And you talked a bit about AD Vivesh, you know, perhaps being influential in getting you to the club. How did he sort of help you personally in terms of breaking into the first team and helping you with your game?
I think it was good that it helped that he knew me as a person before, and he knew how I would cope with things, because I wouldn't show that I was maybe upset or disappointed not by the not being in the squad or being on the bench, and he's quite good with everyone, really, because the gaffer will say what he needs to say, he'll put his point across, and that's really it. It's up to you if you want to go and speak to him, whereas AD will be the one that will come to you and ask you how you're doing and work on this. And a lot of the times I remember he would say in training, if it was the bench players or the people that weren't in the squad, that he would put on a session for me or for someone that he felt needed that sort of uplift, and to show them that they can get in the squad. This is for them to get them into the team sort of thing. And he was really clever at knowing what times to sort of pick someone up and get them going. And he does that a lot, and but he can also do the other half. I don't know how many people have told you about his maybe strictness, or that he's a disciplinarian as well. And if something's not good enough, you will, you're certain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to have both aspects, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Especially with a majority of young group.
Yeah, exactly.
We did have a few senior players who, even the young players, were sort of strict and things like that. We had a few older players, but I think AD really stepped in to make sure the levels were at a certain standard.
Yeah. And it was obviously a real breakthrough season for you. I think you played in almost every game in that season. What do you think you did differently, which allowed you to obviously get in the team and then, you know, stay in it for the majority of the season?
It's hard to say, because even in the game I played 8 games, I felt like I performed well in each of the games I played. And I think the first game I played right wing, I did well. We beat Southend. The second game, I got man of the match against Blackpool that season. But I think the thing that helped me was the assists and the goals. And I think that's, for any manager, it's hard to take someone out of the team.
Yeah, the stats.
Who is providing. And I think that's what sort of kept me in the team, because the gaffer knew I was a good player and I could play for the team and I was maybe just as good. But there were people that were sort of at the end of a game, when you look back and you think, how have we won that game, or why have we lost that game? There were people that were providing, and I needed to, if I was going to play in that position, the attacking midfield role, I needed to become a provider. And I managed to do that early on in the season, which then sort of gave me confidence to carry that through.
Yeah, and it seemed to me like last season the midfield just really clicked. Like, perhaps the season before it wasn't as consistent, and there were some players coming in and out, but like clearly last season our midfield just clicked so well. And I guess you were a key part of that. So I suppose once you're in there, you know, there was no reason to take you out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think our midfield was very strong last year, which is why sort of when Wes unfortunately got injured, we had to sort of change formation. And we had actually worked on that formation the previous pre-season against Stevenage, and it didn't work at all. And we never did it again. But then we did it against Colchester in the FA Cup for the first time. And it was that we were that good that that was our formation now. And it did help that we had a good core midfield, and even not playing then was Callum O'Hare and Jamie Allen weren't playing, but we had enough players in them positions to rotate and just completely dominate games.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we kicked off the season in strange circumstances playing at St Andrews, but you know, you obviously got a huge welcome onto the pitch from the fans who were there. And it must have felt great for you to score in that game and, you know, really kick off our season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a weird scenario to be at St Andrews, but it was because there was sort of nothing we could do. It was we had to play on it. It was the people who were going to come and support were going to come and support, and we were grateful for that. And in my eyes, it was I had to go on that pitch and produce and take my chance, because we had such a good team that year. We had quite a lot of players. I thought that was going to be my moment, and luckily for me, like I took it, and I sort of never looked back that season from then. And that's even got me to where I am today. It's put me in this position, because maybe if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have had as many opportunities that season, and I might not have been where I am now.
And embarrassingly enough, I've got this on my phone, which I've actually watched back a few times, but you scored an absolutely fantastic free kick away from Oxford. We've heard about how many times you've been practicing set pieces. Is it something that you were working on in the training ground, and it's one of those when you hit it, you just know?
Yeah, so it was mostly me and Shippers that were working on set pieces. And like I said before, the most teams sort of do probably 10-15 minutes on set pieces, and it's mainly about the positions of the runners and where they're going to be in the box. It's the delivery, you sort of just trust the delivery. You don't really, they'll sort of practice it on their own, the delivery takers. But the gaffer liked to put a lot of pressure on maybe taking 30, 40 balls a day and putting them on the money sort of every time.
Yeah.
And there used to be some fines if they weren't there. I remember shippers sometimes just looking at the ground, you say, if this doesn't go sort of either in the goal or on someone's head, then it's a £50 fine. Thinking, oh my God, I can't pay £50 if I don't put this in. But
he's not eating that night.
Yeah. So there was a lot of pressure. So I think it did sort of help when it came to a game. We thought, well, I've done this for an hour yesterday. I've just got to try and do the same. And that Oxford one, yeah, luckily for me, it has gone in, because it probably wasn't the most exciting free kick, but just managed to pass it round the wall and hit it from the keeper.
It's one of those games that it just felt like a roller coaster, especially as a fan. And we were probably a little bit disappointed, I suppose, with the actual end result. But it must have been a strange game to play. And it's one of those that typical football, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a strange game. So I remember we were, they played a weird formation with sort of three number 10s in behind. And we'd worked on the tactics to try and nullify that. And it just didn't work. For the first 20 minutes, we were really under the cosh, and they had all of the ball. And when I scored that free kick, it was really against the run of play. And so we went 1-0 up and thinking, well, they've got a lot of the ball. They're putting in a lot of crosses, but not really getting on the end of too much. And then, probably doesn't want me to mention it, but Fankey had a moment in that game. And I think Jamie Mackie scored as well. And that second half was just like, the emotions going, celebrating.
It's really
at one
end to
end,
end then, as well, yeah, isn't it?
You're celebrating at one end, thinking, "Oh, we've done it again." And you go back, thinking, "How have we got ourselves back here?"
Yeah,
but yeah, just probably happy to get out and not lose. I think that was what we were quite good at, especially at the start of last season when we went unbeaten for a while. There were a few games where you're unfortunate not to win, but a few you're thinking, "Well, we haven't lost that game." And we're keeping the points ticking over. I remember there was a Bolton game at the start when I don't know if we had like three disallowed goals.
Everyone
felt like it was just, how have we not won that?
Yeah.
But we sort of turned it into a positive and said, well, listen, everything that went against us today went against us, but we've still got a point and we can move on from that. So
yeah, that's not going to happen every week, is it?
Yeah, it's not going to happen every week. And I think, like, I remember Kells after the game absolutely raging, looking for the referee, trying to get to him. But no, that was just a one-off freak game.
And you spoke about the fact that we sort of couldn't get the ball in the first 20 minutes against Oxford, but a game that we had so much possession in. And I think it was probably, you know, a really great game to watch was the 4-1 win against Wickham. You sort of had a hand in the fourth goal. I think you started the move off, but again, that they just couldn't get anywhere near us that day, could they?
No, they couldn't. And I don't know if it was them, but they were on a good run of form. They were near the top. Their home record was very good, and we went there with no fear. But I thought it was going to be a much more like cagey game. I remember they tried to go man for man in midfield, and we were finding a lot of space, getting a lot of chances. And the good thing about, because we didn't really play a front three, it was me and Shippers and Godders, or Callum, Jamie and Godders, and we were sort of linking the midfield and the attack. But the runs forward were just all sort of off the cuff from us. We were all working really well together, and nothing more summed up than that goal at Wickham with my long ball, Shippers' outrageous flick, and Matty's volley. I even spoke to Matty and he said, I don't know what other game he would have just volleyed that off his left foot. But it was just, it was one of them games where everything was going for us. Everything we were touching, getting through on goal. And that was a really good day.
Yeah, it felt like we'd score every time we went forward. And obviously that Christmas run, we continued and we sort of were winning every week. What did anything click in the changing room sort of during that Christmas time and beyond that?
I'm not too sure if anything different happened, not that I could feel, but the one thing some players do like, and what we were thriving off, was momentum. And because there were games coming very often, it was, you were just bouncing into the next game off your last win sort of thing. And it was just like a roll-on effect. I think we were playing teams that weren't winning. I think we had Wickham and Tranmere game after game, and I think they were the games that Matty got two hat tricks.
Yeah,
and I think our mentality was just bouncing into a next win, into your next win, and trying to, because I think we still had games in hand and we were climbing up the table, and other teams were sort of fearing us, sort of sitting back. And I mean, when Matty got them two hat tricks, I think teams were probably thinking, "Oh, like, please, like, I don't want to play against Godden," sort of thing. And we sort of knew that teams were going to feel like that when we were coming there, and it was just giving us more and more confidence.
And we had Matty on the podcast recently, and he talked a bit about the Birmingham FA Cup tie. Obviously, it was the tie and then the replay. Yeah. And he said that it was possibly a blessing in disguise that we didn't get through, because obviously the fixture calendar was mounting up a bit. We had some really important games. Is that a feeling you share, Zane?
Yeah, and I think as much as I think it was Leicester away they played.
Yeah.
And I think as much as everyone wanted the big game at Leicester and to play in their stadium and whatever, it was a bit of a derby game as well.
Yeah.
I think the team knew how sort of promotion, how sort of important promotion was to us, and how close it sort of felt.
Yeah.
That game, the amount of sort of running and that we did each game, we knew that Leicester could probably tip us over the edge if they dominated the game and things like that. So I think it was a bit of a blessing in disguise that we didn't have a game then, because they were coming thick and fast. I think that gave us a bit of a rest then, and we just continued to push on in the league, just solely focus on that.
Yeah. And the last time a lot of us saw a live football match was away at Ipswich, which seems, you know, absolutely ages ago now.
Yeah.
To us fans, this really did feel like the moment we were going to go on and actually win the league, not just get promoted. Was that the moment for you when you felt like we were going to win the league?
I think it would have been. I think we sort of had inklings from a few games back. We knew how good we were, and we knew the pressure was on us, because I remember I was always on music in the change room. I don't remember what week it started, but when we were winning, we never wanted to get too high. When we lost, we never wanted to get too low. But there was a week when we won a game and AD demanded that we played Sweet Caroline.
Yeah.
And it sort of started rolling on every week, that every time we won, Sweet Caroline went on. And in that Ipswich game, Sweet Caroline went on, but everyone stayed in the changing room and was singing and dancing. And I remember the gaffer was filming, and it did sort of feel like we had won something bigger than the Ipswich game. So I think you're probably right. I think we did feel like then we had sort of, I don't know, got away. We were top with two games in hand or a game in hand or something.
Yeah, we were flying,
And we just felt like we've done this sort of thing, which I don't know if there is the right mentality, but it was just the confidence in the group at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Backer on, and he wasn't too impressed with Sweet Caroline by all accounts.
He probably says that now, but I guarantee he was screaming his lungs off in the changing room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You kind of get into it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, it was quite contagious. I don't actually know when it started, but it was just a week-on-week thing.
It's definitely on his playlist now, that.
Yeah, it is. He's in the car on his own. He doesn't want to tell anyone that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And obviously, pretty soon after that game, we obviously went into lockdown. It must have been a really strange time as a player.
Yeah, it was. And it was a weird one, because I think we were supposed to be playing Shrewsbury on the Saturday, and we were in training on the Friday. And there was sort of, everyone was a bit whispering, and are we going to be playing? Someone said the game's off. And at that time, I think COVID or Corona, it was a big thing, but no one really knew what it was or what was going on. And I think they had told us we were going to be off for a week or so, or 2 weeks. And it was just a never ending text. We're going to be off for another week. We're going to be off for another week. And yeah, ended up just never coming back.
Yeah. And as a player, what do you do to sort of, I guess, keep busy and I guess also keep fit? Cause I suppose you had to be ready to carry on playing at some point if you were going to come back.
Yeah. And that was the hardest part. I mean, we had Adam Hearn, who was our sort of sports scientist, fitness coach, and he was great with the lads, always been great, still a good friend of mine, and he was giving us running workouts, gym workouts, and I'd say it was probably every other day or three times a week, and they were pretty intense. I mean, we started off doing running and gym on Zoom sort of every other morning, we had a few times where he broke it down, took it down a notch, because he thought we're going to need some rest at some point. But they kept thinking we were going to come back in. So it kept getting ramped up again. And we were getting fitness through the roof, and then a bit back down and through the roof. It was never ending until the day they finally said that we were champions.
Yeah, and we're going to come on to football behind closed doors a little bit later on. But just with that, do you think that has had any knock-on effects on perhaps teams? Because a lot of other teams have gone all the way through pretty much. They probably had a 4 or 5 week break, whereas you guys were sort of on the boil for that whole time. It's tough to know whether it's better or worse, I suppose, for players to play all the way through and have a smaller break or a longer break.
I think that we would say that probably playing would have been the better, having a break and then getting back to the season would have been maybe a better thing. And probably the people that had to go back playing, like the championship players, would probably say that no, we would have preferred to have just yeah, like been at home sort of thing. So I don't really know if you can say which one. I mean, we had a tough schedule, and it wasn't nice for anyone. You're sitting at home and you can't go and mix with anyone, so everyone was having the same problem. But it was just a long period of time of just going out and running on the roads, or trying to find a park to run at. It was just a good thing about the weather when we were off, because it was really nice. I mean, if we went into another lockdown and it was getting dark at sort of 4 or 5 o'clock and the weather's not great, I can't imagine that would be a nice lockdown.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
The news came through that Coventry were champions. Where were you when you sort of heard the news, and how did you feel? I'd imagine there's some relief as well as, you know, sort of ecstatic.
Yeah, so I was in my flat in Leamington, and there had been a few dates where they had said, oh, this is the date where they're going to say what the decision is. And like, we knew no more than everyone else. There was a Twitter page called EFL Live,
something,
EFL maybe. Zone. Yeah. And we were getting a lot of our stuff from there, because as much as the gaffer was relaying back what he was getting in the meetings and stuff, there wasn't actually a lot of decisions being made. So we were sort of hearing a date and hoping that was it. And I remember we did know that this was the actual day. So I was waiting, and it was horrible. We still had to do a run that morning, because we didn't know if they were going to say we were back in or not. So I'd done my run in the morning, trying to keep myself busy. And then I thought, okay, it's sure everyone's telling me that we're going to be champions. So I thought, I'm just going to jump in the shower, get ready, and just hope that something happens. I need to do something to sort of take the time away.
Yeah.
So I got in the shower, and as I got out, I see the messages in the group chat saying, like, boys, we've done it, we're champions. And yeah, it was relief, first of all, because knowing we'd been waiting a long time for a text to tell us, rather than playing the last game of the season and knowing if you're champions or not, we were waiting for it.
Because there's some talk of, like, no, I know that got sort of scrapped fairly early on, but there was some talk of void, which must have been really, you know, grim.
That wasn't a nice rumour going round. There was a few of them. I mean, we wouldn't have minded to keep on playing, because that's what we were training for. We were doing the runs every other day, sort of in mind that we were going to go back and either play the rest of the games or play like a mini tournament, whatever idea they sort of came up with. But at the end of the day, we were just buzzing that we were made champions. We felt like we deserved it, and we got it.
Yeah. Was it disappointing that you couldn't celebrate with the fans in the sort of in the way that you know normally would with a bus or something in the city?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's like, for my first promotion, I know a few of the lads have had a couple in the team. You want that sort of to celebrate together, because it's the same as when we're playing, when you win, you want the fans to be there, because that's sort of what you're playing for, that sort of atmosphere, that emotion, everything like that. And as buzzing as I was when I heard we got promoted, it was, there's only so much you can do on your own in a flat. You're calling people and trying to celebrate, but it would have been nice to have had that final day of the season and everyone coming on the pitch, and then have your bus parade around Coventry. Yeah, it would have been unbelievable.
Yeah, and the Sky Blue Army obviously travelled in big numbers in that season. Did they have a big impact on on performances, do you think? The noise and the crowd, especially away from home.
Yeah, definitely. I think we knew going to away games that we were going to sort of pack out the away end or even get more allocated. I mean, some of the games, there was Portsmouth, which I remember massively. The noise there was mental. Peterborough was also an unbelievable one. And that was, they were both draws. So they weren't even wins. Yeah. And the noise there was unbelievable. Two of the best games, I think. I know it's not really home or away, but the Birmingham FA Cup games were unbelievable as well. I remember getting booed on the first one. And that was like that sort of feeling when you're coming out is what I think a lot of players, especially me, I play for. That noise and going to away games was just unbelievable because it just felt like there was a lot more atmosphere. I think at home, there wasn't that many teams that brought massive away fans.
Yeah, so, sure.
The atmosphere was really good from us, but maybe not so much from a lot of the other teams. And the stadium was half empty, so the noise wasn't maybe the best. But yeah, some of the away games, it was unbelievable.
And then moving on to this summer, you made the move to Bristol Rovers. Just talk us through how that sort of came about and this summer.
So there was a lot of talks about me signing a new contract and I think it went on from January till I left, really. There was a contract that had been offered and I'd been told to wait and didn't really want to hassle too much during COVID because no one knew how that was going to end.
Sure.
But then COVID came to an end and we were coming back in and I had a contract agreed and was ready to sign it. And I didn't want to leave Coventry. I wanted to stay. I loved it there. And I've said to many people when they asked me about Coventry, what's it like? And I've said it wasn't work. I was going in to see my mates every day and play football and whatever. And I didn't want to leave, but sort of a weird scenario that never really got to the bottom of and didn't need to in the end because I felt like I wasn't wanted in the way I was when the contracts were being offered and I was playing every week in the team. And I just felt like I had to make the decision like I did at Brentford for my career.
Yeah.
As much as I loved Coventry and I was devastated when I left and I had to make that decision for myself that I need to go somewhere and play because that's when I was happiest.
Yeah,
the season before at Coventry, when I didn't play as much, I was happy, but I wanted that fulfillment of playing every week and being involved in the team. And the season we got promoted, I enjoyed it so much that I couldn't then take a step back to maybe being a bit part-time player at Coventry, no matter how much I wanted to stay there. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I wanted to stay at Coventry.
Yeah, of course. No.
There were really good friends of mine made there. It's the first place I'd moved to on my own. Really sort of set up a home there. And I had to make the decision and I was sort of looking. There were quite a few teams I was in contact with.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I had to make a decision in the end what was going to be best for me playing wise, not what I think a lot of people, maybe fans, would look at it and think, why has he made that move when he had such a good season, he was in such a good team? But it was a move for me that I felt would take my career on and keep me happy, which is the main thing, especially when you're going to live away from home and you're not with your family. You do want to feel happy rather than I'm here somewhere for maybe money or a team that looks really good. So when it comes up on Twitter and says he signed for so-and-so and everyone says, wow, like what a good move. But then you don't see me for 2 years. So like how good really is it? So I made that decision.
What was it for you about Bristol? It's, you know, obviously they've got a real fierce rivalry locally.
So I'd actually the manager got in contact with my agent and because they weren't actually a club I was speaking to when I was speaking to about five or six clubs. They weren't one that was in the mix. And I think they had maybe got wind that I was looking to leave. And they called my agent, the gaffer, and said, I'd really like to speak to Zane and show him the plans of what we're going to do. And my agent said, oh, I'm not too sure if you speak to him at the moment. He's just sort of getting his head together with sort of having to leave Coventry because I was still going, still training at Coventry, just thinking, what is going on? Like, I can't believe I'm leaving. And so they sent me a PowerPoint, quite a lot of it on me and why they want me, and a bit like the way Mark Robbins spoke to me when I signed there. I felt that instant sort of want for me,
and the part that you play.
Yeah, the part that I play, the big role. And I said to my family, I said to my dad, like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone to want me to be a main player, not to just go there to be a number. And I had a few phone calls with him, and a lot of the stuff he was saying was he was trying to change the club to sort of like a sort of a Coventry model.
Yeah.
He wants a young team, young players, hungry, play good football. And one of the formations he actually wanted to play was the box formation that we played at Coventry. And he said, I'd be perfect to come in. I know it tactically, and just sort of sold it to me that way. And I think it took me probably about a week or two to make the decision. But as soon as I'd spoke to him and seen all that, I'd sort of made my mind up that that was where I wanted to go. And I think it might have seemed a bit weird from the outside. But to me, it was quite a clear and an easy decision. And I'd obviously spoken to Tom Davies quite a bit, who was at Bristol. He was selling it to me from that aspect and saying it's a great place for a young player to be. I've made the decision to leave, and I've not really looked back. It's been a good start to the season. It's been tough, but I'm really, really happy and happily to be in like a nice environment like I was in at Coventry.
And how has it been so far at Bristol? Are you sort of enjoying your football? How have the results been so far?
The results have been sort of different. I mean, we had a really tough start to the season. We had Ipswich twice and Sunderland away and Doncaster. And we also had seven new players, which was never going to be easy. And we knew that from when we were training in pre-season. We said, as well as we're training, we know that on the pitch it's hard. We're going to have to take time to gel. So everyone's got to stay positive and things like that, because we were playing well, but there were bits defensively and tactically where we were probably doing stuff that we were doing at our old clubs, which is natural. It's your habit, but we needed to sort of play the Bristol Rovers way. And we managed to start clicking. And I think we got our first win against Northampton. And now we're unbeaten in four, and we're climbing up the table, and we're looking like a good team, which everyone knew we were going to be when we signed. We've got a lot of good players, a lot of young players, but I think you, as much as you get time, to gel, you do have to sort of get your act together quite quickly, which luckily we've done.
Something I'm really interested to get your point of view on is what it's like as a footballer playing behind closed doors. You know, does it have a big impact, for example, when you're behind in a game? And, you know, some people have mentioned possibly there being less pressure, and we've obviously seen in the Premier League just tons of goals going in. So what's it like as a footballer? How does it differ?
I think it has a massive impact. Pressure, for one, there is a lot less pressure. I think that's good in a way, because it gets people to maybe take chances or play, which I like to see. I like to see good football and people take risks on the ball and be confident. Whereas I think when there is a full stadium and fans are maybe getting on your back, people will take less of a risk.
Yeah.
But then I'd say it's been a negative for me, because I love the atmosphere and I love the crowd noise. And if you've got to take it, if you do something bad, the crowd are going to be on your back. That's a given. But if you do something good, that's what you live for when you're football. You score a goal or you do something that gets the crowd off their seat. And I think that's what every player is missing at the moment. And that's why there are a lot of goals going in, because there's just that less pressure element, and people, taking chances, maybe getting a bit lackadaisical and trying things. And there's just not that pressure of, if I do something bad, the fans are on me. And if I do something good, I've done something good, but no one's really praising me in the stand. So sort of, it's a bit of a downer.
Yeah. So possibly from a defender's point of view, they might feel like, you know, they don't have to go the extra mile, or because no one's going to have a go at them afterwards. Whereas normally they know that, like, any mistake they make, that could be it for the game. They're going to have the fans on their back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it makes a difference also when you're away. And we've tried to have that conversation. I think we played against Ipswich away in the cup, the first game, and we were great on the ball. We were playing really nice football. We were dominating the game. We were pressing really high, but they were getting in. And we went in at half time and it was 0-0. We were probably the better team, but they were just cutting through us. And we sort of said, if the fans were here, would we be playing so recklessly? Or would we be saying, listen, this is Ipswich away. It's a tough game. We're going to have to be a bit more sort of robust and think about the what ifs. Because I don't think that's what we were doing. We were just going a bit gung-ho. And it was sort of like, you attack, we attack, you attack, we attack. A bit like a basketball game. And I think we sort of just managed that better when we played against Sunderland away. And we went there and we went ahead, went 1-0 ahead and just said, okay, well, like sort of come and beat us. And we were a lot more structured at the back. And I think that was how you would play if the Sunderland fans were there.
Yeah.
Also, I do kind of wish the Sunderland fans were there because they probably would have got on their back a bit more.
Yeah, that's true. Can work both ways, right?
And put that pressure on them. But they didn't. Again, they didn't feel that pressure and they were playing probably better football for it.
And you mentioned, obviously, Bristol Rovers compiling a decent squad this season. What are the ambitions there? Is it to go for promotion?
Yeah, it is for promotion. And that was, again, quite a big thing for me. If I was going to be joining a team, I wanted a team that had that ambition of getting promoted, because I'd obviously that was my mentality coming from Coventry, and it was sort of accept no less than that. And when I spoke to the gaffer on the phone, he said that is the ambition of the club. They want to get up there and doing it in this style. I mean, we've got a young, nice young team with a bit of experience at the back. I think, we're a good team to watch. We'll start gelling a bit more as the season sort of progresses. We're a good team with big ambitions.
And sort of on a final note, really, what are your kind of personal targets and ambitions for this season? And I suppose looking ahead to the next few seasons as well.
I don't usually set myself too many goals. But again, the sort of assists and goals I got last year, I want to better that. And I mean, I'm playing a bit deeper than I was last year. I was playing sort of behind Matty Godden last year, whereas I'm more involved in sort of build up from the back now and then work the ball up. But I still have like my goals to get more than six goals this season and better my assist number for last season. I want to have a big impact on the team. And I think I've got that sort of pressure now. I think last year I had the pressure that if I was going to keep my position, I had to produce. Whereas this year I am more of a main player. So again, I have to do what a main player would do and produce for the team. Otherwise, there will be someone to come in the team and take my spot.
Of course. So it's been absolutely brilliant having you on the show this evening. Thanks for giving up some of your time to share your Sky Blue story with our listeners. I'd also like to say on behalf of all of the fans, thanks very much for your commitment when wearing the Sky Blue shirt. It was certainly a pleasure watching you play football, and we all wish you the very best for your career.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being on, and I'll always hopefully be in close contact with Coventry, good friends there, and really enjoyed my time there.
Brilliant. Listeners, don't forget to check out our partners Shortland Horn for the latest properties in Coventry. And do also check out the Sky Blues Extra website for the latest range of merchandise, including the Cyril Regis Sabutio t-shirt. And as always, if you want to get involved in the conversation on any of our channels, just use the hashtag SkyBluesExtraPodcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.